The Green Room with Orla Barry on News Talk.
The Indignities of Being a Woman. That's the title of the new audiobook by comedy writers Megan Keister and Meryl Marco. It covers everything from politics, crime, sex, medicine, entertainment, hair and much more. Megan Keister joins me now to tell me all about our indignities. How are you? How
do
are
you need
Megan?
Any help
are you
co- yeah, yeah, yeah. You already know. Okay. I can do what I can.
How did you decide where to start with this?
We just start with gross injustice in general and then go, down to a micro level with things like hair, things that you don't actually think about are oppressive to you, let's say, that you're just used to in your daily life.
So, for example, Meryl, in that case, she looked at sort of the history up until the last century and looked at the hair on the head, whereas you took everything from the neck down.
Indeed. Yes. Yeah. We split it up in that way. I mean, because the hair on the rest of the body has only become politicized recently by recently, I mean, in the past 100 or so years before we were allowed to be more hirsute, let's say.
And now that's
unacceptable.
Yeah, that is interesting that it was kind of the 1900s that women began to feel that they had to shave or do whatever to remove hair from the neck down. What was it, do we know, that made that change come about?
It's probably the same as any other beauty product in that capitalists decided to, make us hate these parts of our bodies in order to buy products and fill their coffers. That's kind of what you can synthesize everything down to that.
Marriage. You also looked at marriage. How did women fare over the centuries and over the decades with regards to marriage?
We used to be property. So now we're not necessarily anymore. I mean, and also in America, at least, you can't be raped by your husband legally, even though, Trump's lawyer says that's not possible. we've made a few steps towards egalitarianism, but not really.
I know. And you still can in other parts of the world. In fact, in Ireland, it wasn't that long ago that they did away with rape within marriage. So this progress is recent and in some cases not at all, depending on what part of the world you live in. Yeah. Was it depressing, Megan, when you went back through it? I guess, you kind of thought, let's look at the indignities and the difficulties. But was it more overwhelming than you expected?
I can definitely say yes, it was pretty oppressive. I mean, to just submerge yourself in the minutia of the misery for, months as we did. It kind of colors your worldview and you can't think about anything else. I mean, I still can't.
What struck you out of all the different chapters that you covered? Was there one in particular that you found sort of shocking or something that you just didn't realize?
I would say the medicine chapter would be the most shocking because in many ways, being a woman could quite literally kill you, especially when it comes to heart disease and the fact that it manifests itself differently in women. But women generally aren't parties to these medical studies that, come up with new medications and whatnot. And also are doctors, male doctors specifically, are disinclined to listen to women. This is like a new form of hysteria by telling you, the way you feel is inaccurate. That was the most depressing of all, I have to say.
And when you talk about medical studies, so clinical trials, women are not included as much in medical trials? In clinical trials?
Women were entirely, they were entirely excluded up until about the mid-century. And still, they're not it's not a 50-50 ratio still. It's mostly men who are being studied, yeah.
And was it because the medical community thought that if they use men, it would tell them the same story anyway? Or why did they exclude women?
It's that, and then also any woman of childbearing age, I think they fear legally if the woman were to happen to get pregnant in the process of being in this trial and something were to happen to the fetus, I don't think they're willing to accept that liability.
Okay.
But then that's also used as an excuse to exclude women. You know, many women don't want to have children, or many women already have children and they aren't intending on having more. Excluding us just because we are able to have kids, I think, is irresponsible.
Yeah, well, irresponsible is one word, yeah. In the chapter on crime, you talk as well in the book about, you know, the statistics of domestic violence, which are highly depressing.
Yes.
And yeah, well, remind our listeners what the statistics are.
Well, you know, the women are generally taught from an early age that the number one thing you have to fear is a stranger. But I mean, numerically, that's just not the case. The likelihood of you being abused or even killed by a partner is infinitely higher than by someone you do not know. And the fact that they're always pushing the narrative that you should look out for the man hiding in the bushes and not the man in your own home is, you know, doesn't let women know where the real threat lies, I guess.
Mm. You also talk about you yourself becoming a victim of domestic violence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That happened.
That happened. And
didn't
you
think it would, and then it did. Huh. Well, you know.
Yeah, and you sound like a tough cookie, so that says something.
Yeah. Well, I've been a feminist since birth, and no, I certainly never thought that it would happen to me, but I underestimated, I guess, the ability that your partner can break your spirit and will and make you believe that you are lesser than and deserved of abuse.
Hmm.
I mean, thankfully, I no longer feel that way. But the fact that someone else was capable of doing that really came as a surprise, I have to say.
And you, like a lot of women, didn't call the police, Megan.
I did not. No,
why?
Because
why not?
I figured that they wouldn't do anything and that would make my attacker more upset and maybe, I don't know, follow through with his threat to kill me. I think that's why a lot of women don't go to the police, because they have no idea whether or not the person who's victimizing them is going to be brought to justice. And also, this person is still in your life, in your home. You don't know what they're capable of. I mean, they've already, you know, abused you in the first place.
Mm. You wrote the book with Marilyn Marco, who has been around maybe 3 or 4 decades longer than yourself.
Indeed. She's been employable as long as I've been alive. Yes.
Uh-huh, there you go. And she's obviously worked, one of the chapters is on entertainment. She's worked in the entertainment business for a long time. So she's able to look at it over the decades. How does she view it today? Does she think there's been a lot of progress?
Well, to talk to her about it, what's interesting with her career and how things are now is that when she first started writing for television, she would tell me that, you know, there was something called a token hire. So every writer's room had at least 2 women in it, just as tokens, just so the people who were hiring didn't look like they were sexist. But nowadays, it's perfectly fine to have a room with no women at all in it. Bill Maher's show, for example, has no female writers, never has. Mm. And the fact that these people are still allowed to get away with it and can't even go through the motions of pretending to be egalitarian is pretty disheartening.
And it's interesting. And even in the last year with all the Me Too stuff, do you think that has changed any of the writers' rooms, that there's been more pressure on them to bring in more female writers?
I definitely think that there has been more pressure and, you know, on a very small scale, there's been more representation. But what I've noticed is that, especially when it comes to the entertainment industry, there seems to be more lip service paid than actual career opportunities or anything. People go through the motions of, you know, saying that they want more female voices, et cetera, but the same terrible projects with the same terrible men keep getting made. So, you know, time will tell if anything actually happens in that regard.
Hmm. Which area, if we can be optimistic for a moment, which area do you think we've made most progress when you look at all the areas that you looked at? Which one did you go, well, now, you know, we're making some progress here?
Politically, I suppose you can say in that women are engaged in politics at all now, as opposed to, you know, it being no women at all, like, say, 100 years ago. So I think the more women engage in politics, the more women who run, the more we're going to have a fighting shot at actually, you know, changing laws and changing ideas and belief systems in order to have women be seen as equal.
Well, that's one optimistic note after a particularly pessimistic or depressing few weeks from the US and your Supreme Court and everything.
Indeed.
Yeah, it's nice to think that there are positive moves in the background as well, and hopefully they will be to the forefront. But if people want to find out a little bit more about the indignities of being a woman, it is an audiobook, not a podcast, am I right in saying? Or is
Indeed.
It a podcast?
It is a book.
It's a
it
book.
Is an audio book. It's a book we read out loud.
It's a book you read out loud. It's written by Megan Keister and Meryl Marco, and you can find it on Audible, on audible.com or audible.co.uk. Megan, great to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us here on the show.
Thanks for having me.
News Talk 106 to 108.